Who is your Pac-1 pick one? Oh, it's Dennis Taylor. That's my Pac-1 pick one. That's fucking crazy.
That guy is crazy, dude. I just found out about how crazy he actually is.
Were you there when we were talking about it?
Yeah.
Like, he's ex-special ops and, like, just can tell you stories about different ways he's killed people?
I don't even know who that guy is.
He was actually on a round of the legacy portion of the SCG event this weekend. He won round two.
Oh, nice.
He was the round two winner.
Yeah, he beat Enchantress with,
for
like,
that guy.
Boros and Legacy.
Like, oh, man, there was some... There was some controversy this weekend over those, for like the quality of players at these events.
Yeah, because they're not very good.
Yeah, well, yeah, but I mean, they were way more vocal than usual about it.
Yeah, well, they're not very good, so.
So there you go.
I just don't know. I don't know, man. Yeah, they were making a big deal out of that.
Who was? I don't even know what this is about.
Everybody on the interwebs was making
a big deal. Yeah, it was both Standard and Legacy. Like, people were just talking the whole time about how everyone was punting every match ever.
Yeah, it was just, you know, it was a punt fest. It was just punted less. Which is generally every game of Magic, but...
What I think it was is that they had Brian Kibler there giving commentary.
Yeah.
So he's, like, saying the correct plays to make.
Yeah.
And then everyone's like, yeah, that play does make sense. And then when the person doesn't do it, they're like, oh, what an idiot. You know?
Yeah, you know, just trying to be the cool kid.
Yeah, but it's like, dude, you have Brian Kibler in your ear telling you how to play this.
Yeah.
Don't act like you would have came to the same conclusion.
That's not it. Everyone's clearly better at Magic than everyone else.
Yeah,
clearly. Right.
That's just why I didn't make fun of any of those guys.
Oh, I'm still going to make fun of you, Medina.
Oh, I'm going to punt, like, big time when I get my feature match.
Always and forever.
I pretty much suck at Magic, but I sometimes pull it out and get lucky.
Thing is that you just defend your positions with such fervor.
I do that with everything.
I know that. But you're just like, nope, definitely right. And then it's just like, you're not.
but no.
I'm pretty persuasive, though.
Except with me. Like, with Magic, you've never convinced me.
Well, you infinitely think I'm wrong with Magic, even if I'm partially right.
I don't think this ever happened.
Yeah, see? I rest my case.
Well, that's not fair, though, because you haven't been right. So it's just saying that.
You don't know that. All right.
It's like calling somebody something they're not and then they deny it. And you're like, well, now you're just in denial.
Yeah.
No, but I'm really not that. No, it's just denial.
It's cool, bro. We understand.
Well, I get it.
Got issues?
It's the first step.
Yeah. All right. Are these people ready yet? I want to do some podcasting.
Welcome to episode 22 of Untapped. I'm Christine Sprankle with
Patrick Chapin,
J.R. Wade.
I'm Frank Lepore.
And I'm Jonathan Medina.
We did it.
That was smooth.
Yeah.
All right, Christine, we can go home now.
Introduction apprehension.
So, as you guys can tell, we have some awesome guests tonight, and we have a really cool show cooked up. So we're just going to start by talking to the guests and seeing who they are and asking them some questions. So why don't you start, Christine? Introduce yourself for the people who don't know out there.
Hi, everybody. I'm Christine Sprankle. I'm known for my Elspeth cosplay from Magic the Gathering World in San Francisco.
Woo woo!
I am Elspeth, but yeah.
Is that Elspeth's voice in your mind? Is that what Elspeth sounds like?
No, that's kind of like more of like my tard voice, but, you know.
So that would be retarded Elspeth, then.
That's it.
Okay, just checking.
All right.
All right, who else do we have?
Why don't you introduce yourself, Patrick? I don't think many of the listeners really know who you are or what you're about. So
this is kind of your first one of these, right?
So my name is Patrick Chapin. I am a writer for Star City Games. I write Magic articles. And I study in the ways of being close to like Mike Flores sometimes. Sometimes I build decks like modern iterations of blue-white Flores Control. And other times, I am a rapper. No, I'm a writer for Star City, pro Magic player, and I guess international playboy. Like,
philanthropist
branding.
I like.
I feel like that initial introduction just had so many levels of trolling. I'm just envious.
It's not even trolling.
They're all very subtle.
I don't know if that's
subtle trolls.
At some point, it becomes like, what is it, like an art form, right? When you're just, when it's like, you know, is that self-deprecating humor? Are you mocking something? Are you?
That's beautiful. That's all I know. Is I'm envious. I'm envious of your ability.
When
you
walk the fine line and you can't tell which one it is, that's when it's good.
Yeah, it was good.
One of my claims to fame: I played in the Junior Pro Tour with Brian Kibler in the early '90s. I used to be in ballet, and I eat a lot of fried chicken.
Nice. What kind of fried chicken?
All kinds of fried chicken. I like General Tso's chicken. I like, I like baked chicken, roasted chicken, chicken wings. I like rotisserie chicken. I like, KFC. I like, I could keep going on if you want.
Do you like Popeyes?
What's that?
Do you like Popeyes?
I do. As a matter of fact, I don't know that I've ever met a chicken I didn't like.
Oh God, I love Popeyes.
Yeah. Dude, where's Popeyes right now? That's starting to sound so good.
Oh man, Popeyes is insane, but you know what's better? Shakey's chicken.
I don't even know what that is.
I've never
is.
Had them.
That's not even a real thing.
I've never.
Dude, it's old school from California, and they used to have these things called Mojos, and they're basically potatoes that are in deep fried chicken batter.
Oh,
listen to this
God.
Hipster over here with his Shakey's and his Mojos.
Wait. So, was it a whole potato?
No, it was chopped potato. It's like potato discs. But they were fried in chicken batter, and this was
called chips.
No. What are you talking about?
Just eat them plain.
They're called Mojos,
like,
bro.
Like,
what's a potato dish?
Salt
what
on
is
them?
That?
And they're like, it's like dried out potatoes with salt on it, and they come in a bag. You know, like Lay's.
Those are chips.
Like discs. You know, they're round and flat. I don't know what you call them. Discs. Potato discs.
Discs. This could be an idea.
It was a thing in Shakey's, man.
This is not a thing. I don't believe
this.
We're going to Shakey's next time there's an event in California.
Oh, yeah.
Is a place.
No, I have
all
to
right.
go.
And Medina's like, oh, it burned down years ago.
It's actually a pizza place called Shakey's Pizza, but they had insane chicken and Mojos.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm looking to see where we can find one of these.
I'm looking right. Oh, Sacramento.
See? Look it up on the internet.
You're just validating him. Why don't you do this?
Look, I'm excited. I want to try these potato discs.
Dude, they're called Mojos.
Whatever.
Stop calling them potato discs.
Check out Shakey's and give me the scouting report. Because I don't know about buying a plane ticket to California to eat discs. Yeah, certified stamp of approval.
Well, it has apparently free pizza coupons and deals online, so...
That practically pays for the plane ticket right there.
There you go. Shout out to Shakey's.
Pizza plug of the night.
You're in Alabama. We could do this.
Dude, this weekend, bro.
There's one in Georgia? Warner Robins? I have family there.
I'm telling you, man. This is insane. All right, so we're going to actually steal a segment from another podcast that is on hiatus right now.
Is it really stealing if you were part of it?
Okay, well, let me tell the story. Okay, so when we were making Untapped, we got the brains of Magic creativity together, me, myself, and I. And I think Frank Lepore was there too. But so it was me, Frank, JR, and Trick Jarrett. And we were talking about ideas for the Untapped podcast. So Frank came up with this idea. He's like, hey, what if we were to ask like 5 questions or something and call it like, it wasn't the 5, but it was something like 5 or something very similar.
Ferocious 5.
The ferocious 5 or something. And he's like, what if we did that? And so I must have dismissed the idea or something in the email chain. Okay. So that idea never got implemented on Untapped. So what ended up happening is when I started helping to make Crazy Talk, I came.
You had to use our Discorded ideas.
No. I thought, to be honest, I thought this was an original idea from my mind. I was like, dude, what if we had these 5 ideas?
This is how Medina operates.
The mind of Medina.
of this magic podcast world.
When sometimes people are like, yeah, you stole that idea. I'm like, no, I didn't. But in my head, I'm thinking, did I? I could have. So I was like, oh, man, I got this great idea, guys. What if we were to ask these five questions and we could call it the five? So they're like, oh, yeah, this idea is insane. So we implement it, and then Franklin Poor listens to the podcast and tells me, I like how you pretty much jacked my idea. And I'm like, what idea?
Yeah, you're just like, oh, this idea is stupid. I'm going to use it on Crazy Talk, though.
And I was like, what idea? And he's like, I came up with the idea for the five. And I'm like, no, you didn't. So he showed me the email, and then I'm like, eh. You did.
Funny that.
Yeah, and you use this like defense. You're like, oh yeah, because you're the only person that's ever thought up asking questions before.
Well, now I'm coming clean, bro. Oh,
yeah. Got me.
I started trolling Frank, and I started saying, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know you invented the interview.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your honesty here. So
all right. So I'm coming clean. I stole the idea of the five from Frank Lepore.
Glad you have that off your chest. Yeah,
I don't feel losing sleep over it.
I feel vindicated.
Well, you can ask the five. How about that? As part of your vindication.
I like it. First time ever.
Reparations.
Reparations. All right, so who do you want to start with, Christine or Patrick?
You're in charge, bro. You're the idea, man.
I defer again, please.
Oh, all right. Christine it is.
Oh, dear
so,
Lord.
So, first question. Christine, how did you get into magic?
Well, I am a recovering WoW... World of Warcraft addict, and
how many days clean?
This is good.
I stopped February. No, the exact day. My account is frozen. It's not, you know, on just like, oh no, I just haven't logged in. No, it's actually frozen.
Well, that's good. You have to do that at some point.
Yeah, I pretty much had to. And I pretty much, instead of, you know, trying to get over my addiction, I just moved my addiction over to magic.
And, I can relate to that.
Yeah. And, you know, just to actually get out in the world and talk to real people and not type to them all online, I guess.
That's good. That's mm-hmm. good, though.
Yeah.
Social interaction. All right. So, and you actually, how often do you play?
What, magic?
Yeah.
God, I actually played for a few hours today. I play for at least like a few hours every day, and then weekends it kind of just, you know, explodes.
Nice. Here. Okay, cool. Yeah. Alright, well, second question was, what's your favorite magic card and why?
I have to be really stereotypical and just say it's Elspeth. I really want to go with Knight Errant because she's just the cooler one to me. But,
you're really going against the grain there.
Oh, I know. But, Elspeth Tyriel, like, that was, like, the first Planeswalker I ever got, so I just thought she was the coolest thing in the world. My main on World of Warcraft was a paladin, so I was like, oh, my God, it's another paladin. She looks so pretty.
So you just find that a relapse, maybe? I think that's...
Yeah, you're finding ways to connect with your old addiction.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's always been Elspeth. Always has.
All right. What do you want to know for in the what is the question you're writing down here?
I'll ask the questions. I miswrote it.
That was all part of the plan, wasn't it, Medina?
Clearly, I misread it.
We have show notes. What else do you guys want?
It's more than we normally have.
Oh, I know, man. It's like when your parents are coming to town and you clean up the house, you know? It's like, yeah, I can get used to this. So the question was supposed to be, before I massacred it with my, what I think it is that my brain thinks faster than I can actually type. So I just crunch it all together.
Your only flaw is a benefit.
And I appreciate the explanation. I wasn't really clear on that. I was wondering about it.
Yeah, I've just cleared that up for you guys.
Make this typo.
Haven't you ever heard of a job interview? That's what you have to do in the job interview, bro.
I wouldn't really know.
You make your weaknesses into your strengths, man. Anyways, I'll tell you guys about that later.
So, that's a good cat's bonus.
Freaking Frank. You're killing me.
What was the question, Mr. Medina?
I'm sorry, I'm trying to compose myself.
Look, we want to know what she wants to know for in the community.
You're killing me, stop. All right, so the question is, what do you want to be known for in the magic community?
Okay, that makes so much more sense now.
Sense.
I just want to be known as, like, I don't know, just, like, the fun, I don't know, Elspeth. Like, what is Elspeth? I want to be known for my costumes, I guess. Just, I don't want to seem like, you know, like, big ol' ego. Like, I want to be known as the magic girl. But, you know, I just want to be, known as, like, the cosplayer of magic. I think that's the best way to put it.
There's not many out there, so I think you've done a pretty good job in cementing that almost immediately.
And I really wasn't expecting that at all.
That's good.
No, like, I honestly, when I first walked into Worlds, I was like, okay, Wizards will most likely ask me to leave. Because I thought it was almost like...
Security escorts are out.
It was like E3 event. Like, E3, you're not supposed to, like, cosplay at all.
Really?
From any of their game. Yeah, it's a big no-no. To
I guess it's like a professional, like...
Yeah, and so that's what I thought Worlds would be. So I thought, I was like...
We're not that serious.
Mark, no, we embrace.
I thought they were.
She walks in, Mark Rosewater gets on a walkie-talkie. Elspeth at 12 o'clock. Yeah, throw her ass out.
No,
401 at the east entrance.
I seriously thought they're just gonna be like, we need you to leave. We can't have you like representing us in anywhere. Just please leave. So that's what I was honestly waiting for, was them to just like come up to me. Like when the first few judges came up to me, I was like, here we go. And they're like, can we get a picture? And I was like, oh, no way.
What?
For real?
But you should have had three dudes dressed up as soldiers so that if they were like, we're gonna ask you to leave, you just like call them and all three dudes will run out, you know?
And that's where my team of like friends would need to come in and like lift these soldier tokens, like, you know, up into the air so that I would give them flying, you know, just
exactly.
Be even more dramatic. It'd be great.
So we're going to be throwing people at judges. Is that what's going on here? I'm just getting
you can
just
drop a bomb to yourself if you ever ultimate.
Whoa!
Sensitive time. What I know is that they had a secret little meeting where they're trying to just decide how best to celebrate their good fortune.
Yeah.
And it was really nice because I got out of costume because I was, like, starving. And I guess Mark was, like, frantically looking around for me. And
well, where did Elspeth go?
Yeah, he's like, I was looking for you everywhere. And he's like, I finally found you, Elspeth. And I was like, okay.
She was like, I was at Taco Bell having a chimichanga.
He calls me by name, by not name,
weird. It was really weird. And he's like, here's like a stack. And he gave me like the stack of really awesome cards. Like the first one, which I like, I did like that little like little scream. It was the book promo Jace Balarin. And
I would scream like that too, actually.
Yeah, that was sad.
Like, oh my god. Like I just like looked at my friend and I was like, this is the coolest day of my life.
What do I owe you?
This was impromptu. He just sees you and is so overwhelmed, he immediately wants to pay you with swag. You think there's any chance in the world WotC wouldn't help subsidize you going to more events?
No, I don't. Like, I just think it was like, I just think I'm almost like too much of a, I don't think Wizards wants to do the whole sex symbol thing, even though they do the whole sex symbol thing.
I don't think they'd even advertise you that way.
Yeah,
I don't think they would just be like, this is a card that we made, and here's the person that resembles her.
But
you know,
this
is the first time somebody's had a costume. I mean, Wizards has paid for people to dress up like Sarah Angel.
Yeah.
Wizards has paid for people like Chandra or something. Like, they've had people in the past in costumes for their characters. I mean, they're not doing it to make pinups. They're doing it just because these are characters that are in the storyline, and by them walking around, I mean, the way you were dressed wasn't exactly provocative.
It wasn't.
Extraordinarily detailed and accurate. The card, you didn't even pick Liliana. I mean, we're talking about a card that, like, it's not about the sex at all. It's not about a female character. It's just about the fact that you brought a character to life with personality. And the costume was epic.
Yeah, see,
obviously pulled it off in spades. I mean,
yeah, and see, that's all I really want to do. But a lot of people just seem to always throw up, like, every place that my picture has been, I've always gotten quite a few comments of, oh, this is just, you know, just the whole thing of just a female selling the game and stuff.
Let me give you one piece of advice in regards to that. Ignore it. Because it's not true. Like, you're simply a player that's embracing this aspect of the game, and they love it.
Like, yeah, no, I really just want to bring my two favorite hobbies together. That's really exactly, that's all. That's what I want to bring to the Magic community. My love of my two favorite hobbies.
And I think you've done it exquisitely.
Okay, so I want you to do me a favor. Take your right hand, okay. Put it on your left shoulder, mm-hmm. and do a little motion, like a little, like just brushing the dirt off of your shoulder. Like I'm telling you, like you need haters. If you don't got anybody hating on you, you need to find somebody to start hating on you. Because if you're doing anything, people are gonna just say stuff.
Oh yeah, no, I know.
Talk about something where there's an awful lot of, I mean, there's a much greater percentage of males to females in the Magic community than in the general population. So of course, this is one of the things they look to, you know.
Well, this is just really all just so like new to me. So it's hard to get used to.
Yeah, haters are are really good. They show you that you're doing
arrived.
Something. Yeah, that you're important enough for people to get pissed off about it.
That's exactly what it is.
Well, I'll have to take note because it's just all like a new experience. I was just really surprised because they'll take the littlest thing. Like you won't even really like remember saying something, and they just like pick at it.
Really?
Like,
I didn't notice.
Dear
that.
Lord. I'm sorry.
So haters scrutinize is what you're saying. No, yeah, you'll definitely get used to it too. Like,
okay,
don't even worry about it.
I love it. I wake up in the morning, I'm just like, who's hating me today?
How many haters I got?
Let's play some games. Oh man. My favorite is to give them a little bit of attention, like I'm gonna engage them, and then just cut them off completely. It's the best.
They feel abandoned. They get that like, hey, I thought you were gonna.
And then they start like, hey man, you're an idiot, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, silence.
Oh, see, I don't know. I got a different strategy. To me, people who, like, my haters are just people who don't realize how much they love me yet. You know?
Nice.
I feel that way too. I feel that way as well. You know? So when somebody in my article, they're like, you're a complete idiot and a worthless, you know, dirtbag, I'm just like, see you next week, bro. Thanks for reading.
Yeah, that's how I hit. Troll them back. I'm like Columbo. So,
was that question 3?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's in an ABC fashion, so it would be question C, technically.
I'm sorry. Patrick Chapin is keeping the podcast on focus here.
We've got people to see, things to do.
All right, question number D, or 4. If you were going to – this actually might not even – this might be just completely
Dude, she could pick someone in the Magic community.
Go with it. Yeah, she's got this.
All right.
Probably
all right.
Kibler.
If you were going – well, don't give her hints. If you were going to get into a bar fight and you could pick any member of the Magic community to have your back, who's your pack one, pick one? A little draft terminology there you slipped in, guys.
Oh, my God. This is so first off, I want to know who would get in a bar fight with a extremely tiny, like, 100-something-pound, like, blonde girl, because that just seems messed up. Just wrong.
You underestimate the trolls then.
Wait, are you guys on the same team or against each other in this fight?
No,
the same team.
Have her back. So they're same team.
Who would you want to fight in the Magic community? Who do you think you could take?
You're using your plus one ability to summon some backup. So who do we have here?
I'm pretty much using my plus one ability. My plus one ability, I don't know. I would have to first say, like, nobody knows him, but my Magic coach. I always
good
have
answer.
To have
what's his name?
My coach's name is Brandon Bale. He's just been playing Magic since the very beginning when Star Wars shut down. So the Star Wars card game shut down. So
is he any relation to Christian Bale?
Oh, no. Come on, really?
I'm just saying he could be a total badass.
People ask him that. It's really weird, but no, he's not.
That's terrible.
No, that's a good answer.
Yeah, so my coach, because
so why him? Yeah, is he like
he's an ex-Marine and Lance that's Corporal Bale and yeah, he, you know, I don't know, I would always trust in him no matter what.
So she does actually have a soldier she could summon.
I literally have like, if the Marine token soldier works, then yes, I literally have a soldier token.
I like it. All right, and last question. What's the craziest thing you've ever done? What's the craziest thing you've ever done?
Nice, Frank. Nice.
That was a little crazy talk shout out there.
There you go.
Like, are we talking, like, magic terms or just anything in my life?
Anything ever.
Life.
I can't talk about all that, but,
we'll edit it out. You can put it in. We'll edit it out. Promise.
Yeah, it's cool.
Oh, I don't know. There's just a lot of, you know, your underage drinking kind of stuff, and you just do stupid crap.
Boring. Maybe. Come on, you can do better than this.
Oh, I know. I just don't know. That's a hard one. This is like putting me on the spot.
I know it is.
Yeah.
Craziest thing I've ever done. I don't know.
You really gotta be careful how you answer this, because you could be less cool by how you answer it.
I know.
Like incriminating evidence.
Yeah, also evidence.
Make sure the statute of limitations is passed on this.
I stayed up past my bedtime once.
There was these cookies in this cookie jar.
Okay, so Christine, how old are you right now?
I don't.
You gotta know the answer to this one.
Okay, you guys would be the first people to get a straight answer from me.
Oh, exclusive!
Yeah,
exclusive.
It is.
I am 22 years old, about to turn 23.
Cool.
If you say your birthday on here, you're gonna have more happy birthdays than.
Oh yeah, I know.
So you have like flowers and.
Yeah. And if you include your home address, and time when you're usually.
if you do that, we're gonna have to edit it out for your safety.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, so what was the craziest thing you did when you were 21?
Oh. Well,
just that 1 year. In that 1 year.
The craziest thing I did when I was 21 that's like really good to narrow it down. I went to Disneyland, and you know Mr. Toad's Wild Ride?
Yeah, I remember that
very well.
Okay, well, in that ride, they don't really have any cameras, so you can actually hop out. If you're like, if you can jerry-rig the little bar that holds you in, mm-hmm. if you can push on enough, you can actually jump out of the ride and kind of walk in the ride instead of like ride it. And if you really like keep up enough, you can actually go do stuff over in the ride.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? You mean like play with the stuff around the ride? Is that what you're talking about?
No.
No, you're talking about,
I don't understand. You're gonna have to explain this out a little bit for me.
You know, just like the giggity giggity over, like, especially where there's like.
So you just went over there and started laughing? I don't understand. Was this funny in some way? I don't.
Bounce,
oh, so you're making music. Oh, okay, I get it.
Yeah, the wonderful music of love.
Oh, little jazz guitar in the Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. I gotcha.
It's funny.
See, now the haters are gonna love this. They're gonna rap.
I know. She defiled Disneyland. Oh,
awesome.
My God.
Awesome. Audio specimen making out in Mr. Toad's Wild Ride.
I know, like. Over half the people that work at Disneyland, and it's just...
There's kids there, Christine, on that ride.
They have to go in with the bleach and with the glove.
I was actually disappointed at first, because when you started saying Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, no cameras, no lights, I was like, oh man, she's totally going to tell the secret of Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. And then you're like, you can get off the ride. And I'm like, wait, where is she going with this? And then you're like, and you can... And I'm like, oh, there it is. That's well known, by the way. You can totally.
I didn't know it. Yeah, whenever I tell people, they're like, what? You can't do it, like, on, cause literally every other ride, if you even try and wave your hand, like, out of the ride, they're like, over the intercom, please keep your hands in the ride, and then they, like, switch it to Spanish, but.
I'm not entirely clear that you actually can do this. Like, this sounds like the type of thing one may have gotten away with, but this doesn't sound like a normal policy for Disneyland.
Well, I've gone.
I don't think it's built into the ride or anything.
Yeah, I don't think this is a feature. I think this is definitely a clandestine operation.
You can get out of the ride, and I've definitely made out with plenty of chicks in that ride.
No,
I'm serious as a heart attack right now.
Are you literally running the? Yeah, I did that too.
I did.
How many times did you go to Disney with how many different dates?
Grad night was at Disney World or Disneyland.
Well, that's one night. Unless
dude, I used
like,
to live in California. Next. We used to go there all the time.
Yeah, no, I moved down to California for a bit, and I just moved in with like about six other people. It was a really crowded house. That all worked at Disneyland, so they would all just bring me in on random days just for free. and they would just show me like different things, but that was just like that one special occasion. But
that was like an anniversary night then.
Yeah.
You know what we're gonna do tonight, honey? You know.
It's so romantic, let me tell you.
Mr. Toad's Wild Ride just got a little wilder.
Ooh. That's a good advertisement.
Oh man.
I don't know if that's the image they're looking for there.
I don't know if that was really like the craziest thing, but it's pretty interesting. It was an interesting time.
Being crazy.
It's pretty fun to talk about. All right, so now it's Patrick's turn.
All right. Same thing, Patrick. How did you get into magic, good sir?
How did I get into it? I guess my a cousin of mine and a friend of mine from way back in the day showed me the rules in between Dungeons and Dragons campaigns. And
so you had
never
learned the game in the system that it was meant to be learned in.
Yeah. I mean, it was the early 90s. Back then, that was what was popping. My mom had bought boosters of Arabian Nights just as a kind of a impulse buy. And then she found out that you actually need that's just the expansion. And so she took them back.
Good selling technique there.
That was before I played Magic, so like she just took it back. So that was almost what could have been. So instead, I didn't get in until the dark. So they had some cards. I didn't even have cards yet, and so I suggested, why don't we draft out of your cards? Because I knew, like, I used to do a lot of fantasy league baseball and stuff like that. So I just suggested we draft out of theirs, and and part of the reason I got into it at the time is because I used to play a million sports. I was playing football, basketball, running track, wrestling, and gymnastics. Like, I was doing all this stuff. And then I had a season-ending football injury. And so I was actually going to be unable to play any sports for like 6 months or something and needed something to do with all that time while I was down. And then just got into Magic and just focused on that.
Well, that's awesome. My buddy Adam had the same thing happen to him. He was playing football for Ohio State, and he had an injury, and then he started playing Magic. And he never looked back. He's still playing. Shout out to Adam
Magic.
Olds.
It's what athletes play when they get injured.
Efro, same way. Efro, Eric Froelich got into to Magic from, he was a badass baseball player. But he actually could have done something in baseball. He was real badass. And then he got a real bad injury. And needed something to do, and he just got into Magic.
Wow.
Wasn't Bob Maher the same?
Not even sure. I wouldn't be surprised though.
Who's Bob Maher?
The great one.
I'm just joking.
Dark Confidant.
I got you for 1 second. Don't lie.
I like how JR's like, he was the Dark Confidant.
JR was like, the guy you put in play, draw cards. Okay.
That guy.
All right. Next question. What's your favorite? This seems so obvious. Maybe you'll mix it up though. What's your favorite Magic card and why?
Say Nibblemongoose one time.
Nibblemongoose.
I mean, my favorite Magic card, if we're keeping it all the way 100% gully, this may surprise you, it's Jace the Mind Sculptor.
What's your second favorite Magic card?
He's banned. What's next?
Really? Jace?
Jace the Mind Sculptor. It combines like everything that's just great about life, you know? Like brainstorming, first of all, is just about the best thing in Magic. You know, you draw cards, you make decisions, the only thing better than drawing cards is brainstorming. And then, being able to fake heal and scry makes the card have 12 different options and lets you, like, bouncing things. I actually love bouncing things in Magic. And then, not having to play with victory conditions. I mean, it is literally, plus it's like the best at everything that it does, and it's one of the 25 best cards ever made. But it's actually a Thinking Man's card. It's like the blue Necrobotans. And it was a card that was criminally underrated in every single format the entire time it was legal. And then it just started getting banned one after another, despite people thinking it never could be banned. But there's so much culture to it. There's so much history in the card. There's so many stories. You and I both know, like, we can relate so much to each other just by, you know, Jace the Mind Sculptor brings up so much. It evokes so much of Magic's sets and history and what's been going on and the tournament culture. It's just it definitely does a good job of being the ace in Magic, you know?
I agree.
I want to know what your top 25 best Magic cards are. That's what I get out of it.
Like that he broke the he's like, well, he's in top 25, that's for
sure. It's because we made a list. we made a list of like the like 500 best cards in order.
Who's we?
I'm not actually at liberty to say.
Oh. The Illuminati, eh?
It's just you, huh?
Yes, it's just me. But we were... No, most of this isn't that interesting at the top. It's like Black Lotus, the Moxes, five of them. Ancestral Recall, Time Walk,
Manic, above or behind the Moxes?
Will, Necropotence. I mean, literally, there's nothing particularly interesting. And now the hottest debate among people is if Force of Will, if Force of Will and Brainstorm actually belong in the, you know, like where on the list they fall. Because it's actually pretty surprisingly high. But.
You think Force of Will is one of the best Magic cards ever made?
It's possible. It depends on, like, I haven't updated the list for are there any cards in the new set that are better than Force of Will? Because I think Force of Will is probably top 25 all time. Like, Force of Will, Brainstorm, and Jace the Mind Sculptor are the primary unrestricted ones in Vintage. Depending on how you, like, what your metric is, Mishra's Workshop and Bazaar of Baghdad are both, reasonable cards to consider, but part of, like, making these sorts of lists, you have to decide what your metric is, and one of the ones we always use is just, you know, the best overall, not just in Vintage, but best in its era, best today, best in whatever format it's legal in, best in whatever format it was legal in before, and so on. And,
Now, does best mean played or, like, the most value you can get out of a card, so to speak? Because, like, I know Force of Will is, like, super played, like, all over the place, and it's like, necessary for certain formats. Like Legacy, you need Force of Will, but I'm not sure if it's, like, I don't feel like I get value when I play a Force of Will. Like, I have to, you know, I have to remove a card, and, like, I don't know, I've always kind of been, I mean, I play Force of Will because it's necessary, but I've always been kind of soured by the card.
Okay, so think of it this way. Force of Will does the same thing Cancel does, right?
Yep.
But it gives you this option that lets you convert whatever the worst blue card in your hand is and one life into a Black Lotus. Like, it lets you play the
My Cancel. Mind is blown.
That's what Black Lotus minus a card.
I see what you're saying. That's a very interesting way to look at it.
Now, granted, Cancel is worse than, like, it's slightly worse than the average Magic card, and Force of Will is worse than Black Lotus, but it is, like, it lets you buy a Black Lotus towards your Cancel, you know?
Uh-huh.
Besides, it's not about the Force of Will, it's not about pitching two cards to stop one, you're not, it's about the whatever battle you're winning. Because, like, if you counter the guy's if you counter the other person's ad nauseum, who cares being down two cards? And if you counter the other person's, you know, game-winning spell, or if you force through your counterbalance, I mean, obviously Force of Will is a card that's easy for people to overrate or to use poorly or to not realize they should sideboard out in certain matchups.
Uh-huh.
But at the end of the day, it's off the charts powerful, and, I mean, it's definitely in the same league as Mana Drain. In lower power formats, but as the format scales up, like the more powerful the format, the better Force of Will is than Mana Drain.
Mm-hmm. All right, I can see that.
Other favorite cards, I guess the other card I get asked about, I guess, or the other card that has I love cards like Cryptic Command and all sorts of stuff like that and Brainstorm, but the other one that I really, you know, has a spot in my heart is Cruel Tomato. You know? There is always a greater power.
Yeah.
It's, you know, just because, you know, people look at it and didn't think that it seems so unwieldy. But when you play with it, it just feels like power, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that card was awesome. I had a crush on that card, too.
Yeah, it's a 7-mana spell that says that feels like you win the game when you cast it, basically.
Oh, but see, that's part of the joy of it, is that you don't just win the game.
Not on the spot, anyway.
You gain life, and you do damage, and you draw cards, and you get stuff back, and you make them discard, and you leave them powerless, and you powerful.
Yeah, you just crush their heart.
To make them not always concede. You know, like, it's just about the most powerful thing you can do that people actually kind of have to just play it out. You know, like, even if you... If you ultimate Karn, people don't play that stuff out. If you ultimate Nicol Bolas, I mean, it's a wrap. I mean, often you don't even have to ultimate Nico Bolas. Sometimes you just activate Nico Bolas and they pack it up.
Yeah.
Cruel Kratom, they usually have to play it out and then they're just powerless and you have all this power and you just get to enjoy what it's like to be, you know, Nico Bolas for a day.
You're like, drew three cards. Oh, look, it's another Cruel Ultimatum. I got plans for next turn, bro.
I also brought back his Muldrifter, so if I didn't hit it, I'll get it eventually.
Bring back Snapcaster Mage.
Oh, that sounds saucy.
Oh, man.
I think you just designed Medina's next modern deck.
Stop it.
What if I Snapcaster a Cruel Ultimatum?
I'll try it, too.
You know.
Don't think right, I won't.
So, is right. The next question the awkwardly phrased one?
Yes.
Yeah. What do you want to know for in the Magic? What do you want to be known for in the MTG community?
What do you even more want to go do look like in the Magic community?
So good. That was so good.
I suppose. You know, I guess probably helping expand Magic culture to being much larger than it is. You know, to being the best it can be. To go to the highest level that it can be, you know, expanding outward, more people playing Magic, more people doing more with Magic, and Magic culture being richer and more, and being a professional Magic player, being a legitimate, good profession, you know, like I have a vision of, and it was started a couple of years ago, but of, 10 years from the future of, you know, 4 years ago or 3 years ago, I guess, but, a future where, you know, there's 20 Magic players who are making six-figure incomes off of Magic-related activities. You know, not even trading or owning stores or anything like that, or poker or jobs, but, like, actual Magic-related activities. And not just winnings, but things related to being a professional Magic player. And another 100 people, you know, making at least, you know, 35, 40K, enough where it's, like, it's a good, solid thing to be doing as they're grinding up and making the culture even bigger. Because, like, even being a professional football player – back in the day, you know, there was a time when professional football players did not exactly make big money, and it has to start somewhere. And if there's one thing that I would be known for, I would hope to be a contributing factor in expanding Magic culture so that being a professional Magic player is a good, legit profession.
Yeah.
Legit.
I like that.
With that answer, what you take away from that is that I said the word legit.
Yeah. Right. Wait, there was more? There was more to that? Oh,
All he was legit like 28 times.
No. I'm totally down with what you said. I don't want to add anything to it because I think it was perfect just the way it was. Go ahead, Frank.
I was actually reading this message from Christine down here.
Has anyone really been far even as decided to use even go want to look more like?
Exactly! I was wondering the
same thing. Oh, man. You guys are bastards.
Oh, that is beautiful. I love this. This is a new thing. It's just our new meme.
Just beating the crap out of Medina. You know, our listeners...
Our new meme.
Our new meme.
All right, fourth question. If you were going to get into a bar fight and could pick any member of the Magic community to have your back, not to fight, who would you pack one?
If I could pick, Brian Kibler, actually.
Really?
Oh my god.
Yeah, well, first of all, we've been to a few bars and there have been a few situations. This isn't the first time this has come up, but he was a badass wrestler, you know, and it's been a few years since he wrestled, but if, like, the first name that comes to mind of the guy, like, I mean, I hang out with a number of guys at bars at the Magic tournaments who can definitely hold their own. One in particular, Brian Kibler, can definitely, like, Brian Kibler can kick the shit out of some people. Like, wait, I can't say that. Can you guys censor that out?
No,
we're adults. It's cool. You can say it.
Okay.
Just let it all out.
Yeah.
No. Brian Kibler is definitely, he's actually got some, he's definitely a scrapper. And, let me see.
I mean, he doesn't look like it at all with that snazzy jacket and...
Oh, don't...
It's not enough to have a like arm and...
No problem bra or something like intelligence. That.
Somebody fan her.
Obviously, it wouldn't just stop with the charm and the looks and the intelligence. Like, clearly he can fight as well. Why not?
And he can play piano and cook.
Fight.
Jazz piano.
What? Are you lying? Or are you being actually...
No.
Oh, my God.
No, that's true. Another good one is Jerry Thompson.
What? Now you're just bullshitting us.
No.
I know,
no,
Jerry.
I'm telling you, it's not about the size. You know that. And he's not a small guy.
He's not, I mean, yeah, he's like 6'1"
well, or 6'2",
but like,
though,
he's a twig. Not to hate on Jerry.
You just have to pick Todd Anderson.
Hold on a second. You think I'm a twig?
I mean, I don't think I've ever seen you in person.
I'm a skinny dude. I'm 6'3" and a half, and I weigh 153 soaking wet.
Sure. I mean, I don't know your fighting ability. Like, do you know, like, Krav Maga or something? I don't know.
Months like, for a fight in prison.
Boom.
Fair enough. I mean, yeah, you might have an edge on me.
Might have an edge on me.
So I'm telling you, it's not about you know, pick people or who are freaking big or whatever. You got to, and now obviously there's plenty of dudes that I could pick if we're just going to also, you know, just pick people that people at home have never heard of. But like, you know, not everybody is and don't get me wrong, like we're all peaceful people. We don't go around just starting fights with people or anything, you know, but like, you know, some people, you know, some of the Magic pros are pretty far. Like I'm not going to mention any names on this, and people who've read all my articles may be able to fill in the blanks on this, but set up. I was at a – actually, no, you know what? Fuck, forget it. Yeah, I'll tell you. So I happened to be at a bar with Mark Herberholz and Paul Reitzel at Austin, actually, back – the one that Kibler won, actually. We were partying somewhere, and after we leave one of the bars to go to a different bar, we happen to get – or no, not even to a bar, just to go to an after party or something. We go to the street where there's like four or five different bars that all let out at the same time, and all the different crowds from all of them came out and just flooded the streets. And, you know, tempers were kind of flaring, and there was apparently some drama. And so fights started erupting, and it kind of turned into a little bit of a riot. There were dozens of police officers, but the crowd was far, far, far too big to be contained easily. And immediately, Paul and Mark had two completely opposite reactions to the fight. Not even just fight. Like, there's a whole, like, there's a circle with 100 people, you know, like, Beat It is playing. They got the knives. No.
Wrists are taped together.
Things are definitely out of hand. And there's, in particular, it looks like there's two people who are definitely ripped up, big dudes, kind of angry, looking like they want to kill each other. One of them just ripped his shirt off. The other obviously didn't have one to begin with. And they're yelling at each other about something about a girl. And they're just – and they're going back and forth. And it looks like it's about to erupt because each one of them has like a crew of guys behind them that are like, you know, yeah, 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 yeah. So immediately, Reitzel, boom, takes off running one way. Boom, Herberholz takes off running the other. I obviously have to run after Reitzel because he's running straight to it. Like Herberholz ran the other way. Like, dude, I gotta get the hell out of Dodge. Don't get me wrong, he's no slouch either. He just, there's like a riot going on. He didn't really see the need to get in the middle of it.
Clear, yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
Reitzel is a maniac. Reitzel is, he's the type of dude, he's like, wow, this is where the action's at. I want to be where the action's at. And so he ran up and started negotiating between the two of them. You know, he literally runs up and he doesn't know these guys. And this crowd is very, you know, tempers are on, you know, 9,000 here, but Reitzel's literally like, are you going to let him talk to you that way?
No. That's awesome.
Probably not the most diplomatic thing to say.
Shout out to Paul Reitzel.
Yeah. You know, did you ever hear about the time he tried swimming away from Hawaii?
No.
That he top-aided, one of the pro tours he top-aided?
I just knew he had to be a madman when he was playing in the pro tour and at the GP at the same time, running between tables.
After day one of the pro tour, and keep in mind he ended up going on to top eight. Or no, actually it was after day two, but before the top eight. In any event, after one of the days, and he ends up top eighting this pro tour. He got a little bit drunk, and by a little bit drunk I mean, you know, about 1.5 times as much as would kill you or I, but he decided, in his infinite wisdom, to swim to the next island.
Oh my god.
Familiar with the layout of Hawaii. And just to set the stage a little bit, we were in a rented beach house from Elizabeth Taylor. Like, this is back you know, Pro Tour Honolulu that, like, I guess the Kibble are also top it, the one a couple years ago. But, we had rented people had rented a beach house from Elizabeth Taylor, from one of her representatives, and this thing was beautiful. It's absolutely gorgeous. There's tons of rooms. There's a swimming pool in the middle of it, and the house wraps around it, and it's connected to a beach, and, you know, it's Hawaii, so it's always perfect anyway. And he decides he's going to swim to the next island, and there's lots of problems with his plan outside of, you know.
outside of the distance.
On the north side, and so, like, he's going to hit, what's the next thing he can hit is, like, Alaska. So it's not like he's really going anywhere. But the other problem is that apparently – it's surrounded by a coral reef.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he was blackout drunk, swimming in the ocean, trying to get to the next island.
Did he make it?
Spoiler, he's still alive.
Actually, instead of the craziest thing I've ever done, this is the craziest thing Rietzel did that month. So he ends up, you know, getting caught in the riptide, gets knocked into the coral. You know, he doesn't really know anything beyond that because he was kind of, you know, he doesn't even really remember swimming into the ocean in the first place. But eventually, somebody else in the same neighborhood found him because they just happened to randomly be enjoying a romantic night. You know, it's like 3 a.m. or whatever, and they're sitting on their porch with, you know, a man and a woman drinking a bottle of wine. Some dude washes up on shore. And they go help him, and he's cut from head to toe. I mean, it was bad. It's kind of funny, but it's also kind of like
that sounds horrifying.
Kind of tragic.
Yeah, no, dude, and he even after that, he kind of checked himself a little bit because that's one of those, you know, you got to be careful you don't die type of situations because he was cut from head to toe and just he looked like a mess because I mean you get caught in a coral reef with the riptide.
Yeah.
When you're blackout drunk, so you don't even know which way to fight. But he has definitely got 9 lives, and at this point, I think he's probably got at least 2 or 3 of them left.
that is awesome. It's awesome.
Okay, so that explains Paul. He's what about you?
Never really known for fighting, but he is completely like he is fearless and definitely will get in the middle of a fight for sure.
That's sick.
Right. Sorry, what's the next question?
No, it's okay. I was gonna say that's Paul. So what about you? What's the craziest thing you've ever done? The laugh is always positive.
I mean, you ever watch Oz?
Or The Sopranos? Yeah, that was that with Dorothy and
right, there was a wizard and a Yellow Brick Road.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I guess craziest thing I've ever done. I used to, for a while, I was into jumping off of buildings recreationally.
Parachute or like were they very small buildings?
I used to be kind of a wild. I went through a wild child period when I was younger. Definitely partied a little bit hard and got into a number of situations where, I guess, dude, it's tough because what can you even say?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, statute of limitations doesn't necessarily expire.
So your answer is how much time do we have, basically?
I'll
answer the same question. No, dude, 21 was a bad year to answer that. the craziest thing I've done, dude, how about
you guys go on the internet and just search for Patrick Chapin's name.
I said earlier today, I was in a fight in prison and ended up in solitary confinement for a month. That's pretty crazy, right?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Dude, so at one point, just sitting, minding my own business at the cafeteria, right?
Yeah.
And suddenly there's a, you know, I'm just sitting there eating fried chicken and it's this.
There's
this,
that fried chicken again.
Everywhere. So there's this popping sound and there's like a bulb, you know, it's like one of those old cameras, you know, from like way back in the day, bursting, like the bulb bursting, taking the picture. And there's this flashlight and you hear the sound of, right? Except that then I look to the, you know, I turn to see what it is, and the next table over, the ceiling fan flew off the hinges, flew down, and sliced open the face of 2 of the guys at the next table over.
Oh, wow.
Not all of the buildings are
not the preferred outcome.
Or one other story on this topic, and this will wrap up, I guess, the crazy. This isn't so much a crazy thing I did, so much as a, you know, just crazy life and times type of thing, but at one point, I was at a facility where I was on top of a mountain, And the weather up there was very turbulent. There's, you know, a lot of storms or whatever. And when there would be storms, they'd make everybody come inside because you're on top of a mountain. So there's like, you know, it's not safe to be, you know, in that weather. Well, during this time period, I was into playing a lot of chess and, listening to hip hop and playing basketball. And, as a result, the crowd that I kind of ran with, all black guys, which, you know, it's all good by me. It's no issue at all, but, some of the white gentlemen at the facility did not take kindly to the whole thing and tried to non-consensually, enlist me in their little, you know, skinhead type deal. And I wasn't really going for it. And, after, being warned a couple times, I got one final warning, so to speak, from a guard, actually. A guard told me that I need to associate with my kind. Because, you know, that's pretty messed up. Because once the guard tells you, you're like, well, shoot. I mean, what does this mean?
So he was like, magic players need to hang out with more magic players?
So
he was playing chess. He was saying hang out with other chess players.
Oh, chess players. Gotcha.
Yeah. So, all right. Yeah, so, I mean, and the messed up part, though, is that there was a lightning storm that night, and he actually the next day I found out he got struck by lightning and died.
What?
Wow.
Yeah.
You
like
okay.
He flew the flag at half mast the next day, and everybody's like, you know, asking what's going on. Got struck by
That's
lightning.
Weird. I was
that was the last time.
I was
time,
expecting
you know.
To say like you know, the lightning storm power went out and he got shanked or something, but no,
he actually got struck by lightning on top of the.
That's
he was,
insane.
You know, that when they start ringing the bells or whatever, everybody has to go inside and the guards are still outside often, you know, directing people or whatever. And he happened to be, you know, he was just doing his job or whatever. And he happened to get struck by lightning because, you know, when you're up that high in the middle of the rainstorm and there's lightning hitting, it is an increased risk. Now, it's not very probable, obviously, but it happens to some people, including him. And it was definitely kind of threw me for a loop after that because I didn't really, you know, that's one of those things where you start to question, you know, like what the hell is going on in life? You know, like that's really weird, you know?
Yeah, like, when you have someone get struck by lightning that you know, you got to be asking yourself questions like,
I didn't see that coming.
What does my life look like if I get struck by lightning?
Well, not even just that. It was how surreal it was that my last experience with him had been he had threatened me, right? Mm-hmm. So like, you have this sort of negative energy towards it, and you're like, oh shoot, well, I guess I feel bad. That's weird. Life's weird.
Yeah.
Did you feel like you were God for a brief second, and then it was your unconscious fighting him?
No, not so much like that. So much as a wondering, am I hallucinating right now? You know, like, am I in a room right now, and this is all just, you know, a delirious fantasy or something?
That can be a feeling.
Here's a question for you. This might be a good one. What do you think? Like, what do you think the number one thing is that prison taught you?
I gotta think of a more concise way to phrase it, but. That whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. You know, that building character is awesome. You know, not going to prison is certainly not awesome, but all of the trials and tribulations in our life, every hardship we experience is an opportunity to grow and to experience life and to become stronger and to make a decision about who we are. Mm-hmm. And as horrible set of experiences as have gone along with that, it's also been a source of an incredible amount of education and growing a lot stronger as a human being, as a man and as a human being, and just learning more about, you know, like so getting like even in that, which was just about, you know, one of the worst things you can imagine in it. There are all these blessings, you know, meeting people that I never would have met otherwise and learning things I never would have learned otherwise and learning an awful lot about myself, about, you know, becoming, you know, what I'm capable of, and that, you know, like compared to that, everything seems easy, you know? So like now I'm doing stuff and it's like, you know, you face a problem and you're like, that's really not that big of a problem. You know, like, you know, the card you wanted turns out to, like, you try to order it and it ends up being $3 more because you waited and refreshed or whatever.
You know, like in the grand scheme of things, what's
that? You know,
that?
You accidentally, you know, you run your car into another car, whatever. All these little things in life, not that big of a deal. It'll be okay. And whatever problems you face, I mean, you can overcome them. And every single thing in your life is a blessing. It's an opportunity. And like by looking for the blessing in everything, just leads to so much more happiness and success, you know?
Yeah.
I really do believe that, I mean, everything happens the best possible way. Even the stuff that's really, really bad. Because, like, if you're reading a story and nothing hard ever happened, like, the protagonist never had to go through anything ever, the story would be really boring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
unrealistic, to be honest.
And part of that is that our experiences in life don't line up with that at all, right? Because we're defined so much by, like, we define ourselves, but we often make these decisions about who we are based on the hardest experiences in our life, you know? And so it doesn't, now, don't get me wrong, never, ever, ever going to go back. Never, ever want to be a part of that, you know? But at the same time, I'm extremely thankful for the opportunity, you know, and every hardship that I encounter in the future. You know, like, for instance, this year, missed the Hall of Fame by a couple votes, finished ninth on Breakers at Nationals, started out strong at Worlds, bombed out in day three. You know, there's all these different things that'd be so easy to get hung up on. 29 pro points on the season or 199 pro points, all these little things.
Mm-hmm.
But each one is a blessing because it's going to, in some way, lead to some other thing for me. I don't even know what all it's going to lead to that's good, but by just having a frame of, you know, by having a view of life where you're just looking to find the good in everything, it leads to seeing so much more opportunity that you normally would have, you know, just overlooked.
Yeah.
Life is the biggest free roll anyway. Like, seriously. Where the fuck do you think you get off getting, like, that you are owed a life? The fact that you have a life in the first place is the biggest free roll in the world. Every single thing is good. Everything is good. All the things that are painful, they do hurt. But, man, life is good. Each one of those things may hurt, but in time, they're all going to pass. And the character that you build as a result and the life experiences you have, they stick with you. And the impact you have on other people, it sticks with them. You know, it has some permanence.
Yeah, definitely.
God damn, Patrick.
Yeah, seriously.
Fucking killed it right there.
Yeah, well.
Oh, man.
We're all better people now.
I was always curious about that because I heard about all kinds of different things, you know, when I first started reading about magic figures and people in the magic community and stuff. And your story always resonated with me most because my family, like a lot of my family members, have been in and out of prison. Like my brother's locked up right now in Oklahoma, and my dad was in jail when I was born. So I always wondered, like, what you took away from it. And, you know, I could always see a just like a hunger for things in you that I couldn't see in other people, and kind of like an understanding and a way that you looked at things that I always liked.
Dude, absolutely. I mean, I cannot recommend enough for people to really think long and hard about making decisions that potentially put themselves in a spot like that, because that sucks. I mean, there are definitely an awful lot of times where I think, you know, like, time is just flying by. You know, I'm 31 now. Time will just, like, there are times where I just think to myself, oh my God, what I could have done with another 5 years, you know? But you can't, I mean, so, like, all I can, like, I don't regret it, don't want to change anything. And I did spend those 5 years just, you know, I got an education at the School of Hard Knocks, but definitely recommend, you know, other people think long and hard about the decisions they're making, because you gotta do what you believe in. You gotta stay true to yourself. But you also want to make sure to evaluate the EV equation to the best of your ability, you know?
Yeah.
That was the duration of your sentence was 5 years?
Yeah.
Hmm. Damn, that's harsh.
That does seem like a long stretch, I'll be honest.
Yeah, it's really cool to hear that kind of stuff. Because I'm kind of worried about my brother, you know, he's young and he's been in there. He's going to be like, I think he's got 7 years or something like that. And, man, he was such a good guy, you know, and just hung out with the wrong guys, made some bad decisions, and boom, friggin' he's in there, you know, and now I have to try to influence him through the mail, you know?
Dude, it's tough because, like, I'm sure there's going to be times where he gets down, where he's despairing or where he, you know, and
yep.
you feel powerless because you don't even know how you can help him, you know, like, what can you even do? But providing, you know, being there to support him mentally, that's the biggest thing. Like, even now, there are people that, you know, some of my homies, some of my buddies are still down and I can't go visit them, but I can, like, I'm not able to visit them, but I can, you know, I write them and, you know, send them money once in a while and try to just keep them positive. You know, we talk, chat on the holidays. you know, just try to remind them that there are people out here that care about them, you know?
Yeah, it's good to have, like, that anchor for my brother because, like, there's so much of that garbage, like, just, like, the whole set thing and, like, all that stuff is just pushing one way, you know? And, like you say, like, riots can break out and stuff and, you know, you just want to – I just want to give them, like, this perspective that, hey, there's somebody – you know, there's somebody out here who cares about you. Like, don't just go and make stupid decisions in there because, you know, you think you got nothing to live for or nothing to, you know, nothing to come back to, you know?
Absolutely.
Like, from someone who's never, you know, experienced it, like, 5 years seems like a lifetime, you know? So, like, the fact that you, like, did it and you're better for it, like, that's I think that's incredibly impressive personally, so.
It definitely gets to the point where you forget what it, like, where life before you were in just seems like a dream. It just seems like there's another world. You know, like, if you think back to what it was like back, you know, in school, like, as a kid, that seems like a different world almost. Like, it seems like it was you, but it was, like, a lifetime ago. But, like, that's what it was like where the real world, you know, like, you remember what it was like to do things like, you know, walk to the store.
The world keeps moving while you're there, you know, so you have to catch – what was catching up like? Was it like
– I got out. I didn't know for, like – I didn't even realize what people were talking about. Like, a buddy of mine says that his favorite thing in the world is his BlackBerry. And I said, well, what's your BlackBerry? So, your phone is your favorite thing in the world? When you're in there, you sort of – you hear about stuff, but it doesn't really fully sink in that everybody's phones are like cameras and take pictures and video and have the internet and play MP3s. Like, I mean, it wasn't even that long ago that – I mean, just before – like, around – people had just started even getting cell phones at all, you know.
Yeah, like 2002.
And, like, I get out and everybody's got computers on their – you know, everybody walks around with a computer in their pocket.
Oh, man. Yeah, now they have phones in prison.
They had cell phones then, but they have, like, disposable ones, and they're all illegal. Like, you're not supposed to have
them. You're not supposed to have them, but they have BlackBerries and stuff in there, like...
Well, some people, but I've tried to, you know, just stay out of trouble, stay away from all the drama, you know? Yeah.
You gotta check your stocks when you're in there, you know?
It was funny, because my cousin, he's also locked up, and he was, like, he started a Facebook page, right? And I'm just like, oh, man, Georgie got out, you know? So I go over to his Facebook page, and I send him a message. I'm like, hey, dude, when'd you get out? Like, blah, blah. And he's like, he writes me back. He's like, yeah, I got a BlackBerry in here, bro. I'm not out. I'm just like, oh, man. This is crazy. Yeah. So.
So, I hear St. Louis.
Yeah. Getting back on track.
I told you our, you know. Not very stringent on our plans here.
I think our listeners enjoy this whole conversation.
Wait, so what did Chapin say the craziest thing he ever did was?
I think it was, like, not get a BlackBerry until, you know, later.
Yeah. Oh, he held off on getting a cell phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the craziest thing he's ever done.
I don't even know.
All right, so my girlfriend and I wake up in Puerto Rico, and Brian Kibler is between us. And it's like, okay, this is awkward. Oh, I'm serious.
That sounds planned.
When you have Kibler on, ask him about this. He crawls into bed with Amanda.
This is for real?
For real. So Amanda and I are just in bed minding our own business. You know, now granted, we did go to the master suite or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's the middle of the night, and we don't even – it's a big bed, you know, and there's a lot of guys in the house. So, like, you know, people have to find a place to sleep. And to be fair, it was the room that Kibler and I were supposed to be splitting. Uh-huh. So this isn't unreasonable of him. We just thought that he was going to, like, we had left him at the bar, and it sounded like he was going to, you know, he was hanging out with some other people all night or something.
Yeah.
And I guess he eventually came home at 4:30 in the morning, 5 in the morning, and crawled into bed with us. And we ended up in a snuggle sandwich, you know?
Nice.
Hey, baby, the Dragon Slayer sleeps where he wants.
No rules for the Dragon Slayer.
I had a snuggle sandwich with JR, and... And who else was in the bed that time?
I don't remember. Where was this at?
This was, I think it was at...
I was like, I forgot. Forget it. Don't worry about it.
I don't know.
Yeah. I blacked that out. All right. So
Medina, I think the real secret was there wasn't a third person. It was just, there was no sandwich. There was two pieces of bread.
All right, St. Louis. Talk to me about St. Louis.
So, yeah, let's move on to St. Louis. St. Louis just went down. Star City Games open, and it was interesting to me. I know, Patrick, you just wrote an article about like the breakdown on the metagame from there. But like, what really surprised me is that there was three Illusions decks in the top eight. Like, I think Illusions is a great deck, and I was considering running it at the Invitational, but what surprised me is that I feel like it has the big target on its head, you know? And so, like, even with the target, it still put three players in the top eight. What do you think about that?
The deck to beat. I mean, it has the target, but it's the classic problem of, first of all, it's like fairies, where you can't just put a card or two in your deck that hose it, and, you know, for the most part, you can't just put a hate card and hope it cleans up the mess. And the deck's got lots of glider manipulation and counter spells and a high threat density, and it's fast and aggressive and consistent. So like fairies and Callblade, whenever a aggro control deck gets good, it can become very resilient quickly. You know, like the way to fight an aggro control deck is that you have to have a strategy that has aggro, like has the matchup in mind across the board. And, I think that people should be playing even more cards. You know, it's good to be playing the stuff like Gutshot and all that stuff, Galvanic Blast, you know, different cards like that. But having spoilers on top of that, you know, some card that can take over the game, like an Inferno Titan or Olivia or Curse of Death's Hold or Elspeth Terrell, actually, or, you know, just having something that can just completely take over the game to complement your early interactive cards leads to being able to actually fight them well, you know? That and their biggest weaknesses are like Mono Red and Grixis. But no, I think the deck's actually just real, real good. And people are not taking the proper steps against it. Because you gotta remember, even though Todd Anderson unveiled it 2 months ago,
Yeah. Basically
nobody played it for over a month after that.
Yeah, it took a while.
So it's kind of a newcomer. Like, a lot of the random people at tournaments didn't fully prepare for it as much as they should have.
I don't think they respected it. Like,
yeah, I actually have an Illusions deck. I built it in between Innistrad and stuff, and nobody at FNM. It was just it literally slaughtered for like the first like 3 weeks. It was kind of ridiculous.
That's sick.
It feels like Wizards was like, people are complaining about blue control cards. Make them the aggro cards. Give them the 2/2 for 1s. Give them those.
People love that kind of thing. The fish decks, people love those kind of things. And I think the Illusions deck's actually in a pretty good place, because even though it's fun and powerful and consistent and everything, it's not oppressive. Like, it's not like, you know, fairies or Callblade or anything. It's not even that big of a deal, because I think that as soon as people actually set their sights on it and, you know, slant things against it, you just got to remember in this that it'll change, you know. But you got to remember in this format, everybody was told you have to slant against Mono Red, and then you have to slant against Solar Flare, and then you have to slant against Wolf Run, and then the deck to beat is Green White Tokens, and then, you know, and now the deck to beat is Illusions, and there's going to be another deck to beat after everybody focuses on hating out Illusions. But right now you still have to. Wolf Run is the other big one. Wolf Run put 5 people in the top 16 or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Now, they all, you know, barely missed out on the top 8, but 5 people in the top 16 is no joke. And the new Inferno Titan variations are very, very strong against this metagame full of one toughness creatures. And as people get used to the fact that people just don't play as much white weenie type decks, you know, green white tokens or white blue humans or Callblade or any of those type of things, people aren't playing those decks quite as much, and they're playing more Wolf Run and Illusions and, you know, various control decks like Grixis and Mono Red, lots of Mono Red. You know, the format's changing and it's continuing to evolve. So, I mean, I think Illusions is great, and it's the first deck that should be in everybody's gauntlet, just testing in this format.
Mm-hmm. It's okay.
You heard it here first.
Like, if you want to beat Christine, if you want to beat her, you're going to have to test against Illusions nonstop. And whatever you do, not test against Grixis.
Well, it's so weird. Like, I literally, like, made this deck, like, a while ago, and everybody's like, well, it's not going to go that far, blah, blah. And I was like, well, I just made it, like, on the fly, like, in between stuff. Like, I wasn't really expecting it to go anywhere. And I literally last week, like, ripped most of it apart and started making green-white token decks. So I just think it's kind of funny that now it's like, oh, illusions. And I'm like, well, fuck, like...
Just go back to it.
I jumped off the bandwagon, I guess.
you were playing illusions before it was cool. Yeah. Now that it's all trendy and all that, you know.
Picture.
You want some postmodern green-white tokens, you know. Now the green-white tokens, you know, other people think that it's old hat or whatever. You're bringing it back. You're like a retro.
But exactly.
I think she just wants to play Elspeth. I think that's all.
There you go.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what to play for the Invitational, and I'm in between, like, Illusions and Grixis. And Grixis looks, it looks pretty insane. I mean, the latest one, the one that made the top eight, that guy was running a lot of removal. Like, he had 3 Doom Blades, 3 Galvanic Blast, a Go for the Throat, and then, like, 2 Black Sun Zenith, a Life Finale, and then also, like, Chandra Fireburn and Olivia.
Yeah, and 2 Chandras too. Those are more removal.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. So I'm just like, damn, like that's what it takes to beat Illusions. that's a lot.
Grixis is a real good choice.
The other thing is like I've been playing your list, the Grixis list that
Did you put Grixis calling out though? Whatever you did.
I did.
Okay, good.
Just because like take up the Golem.
The Golem was great for Worlds. He was absolutely fantastic, but that was a metagame full of people playing Oblivion Rings. You know, that was for a world where people were playing green-white tokens and people were playing, you know, lots of white-blue humans and Callblade and all these different decks. If everybody's playing Vapor Snags and, Volt Charges and even the Wolf Run people are playing,
Slagstorms.
You know, Slagstorms.
Yeah.
This is not the time for Precursor on them.
Yeah, so I cut those, and I cut what else did I cut? I added a Grave Titan because that guy's really good against control decks, and he's just like he seems to close the game very, very fast. Like even against a control deck, if they have a piece of removal or something, it's like he's really good.
Yeah, creature
that
sticks 10 power on the board at once closes the game out pretty fast. Huh?
Yeah, pretty fast, dude. Pretty
How fast are we talking? We're talking like. 3 turns? 4 turns?
One thing like 2 turns fast.
I'm thinking 1.6 turns. So yeah, I added one of those. And I was thinking about porting over this Chandra Sorin's Vengeance. Do you think that's just too cute or like
no,
I think
that's reasonable.
Like I think a lot of people like are gonna see that and be like, oh, I definitely wanna do that. I'm just not sure if I'm just like into like the idea of doing that, but to me it makes a lot of sense because
yeah, but it's funny because you're saying it like it's new, but that was actually mentioned like as soon as those 2 cards were revealed.
Yeah, like it's a good combo, and it's not even just the combo. The cards are good on their own because, like for instance, you know, Sorin's Vengeance gives you a way to sidestep some of the ways people are attacking the format. You know, like for instance, playing as Wolf Run. If they're loading up on Autumn's Veils, you can't really rely on counterspells to keep the Primeval Titan off the board. But if you have Sorin's Vengeance, you can actually just go over the top of them. You know, they play Primeval Titan, and you just go drain you for 10 and snapcaster my Sorin's Vengeance.
Yeah.
Oh, you just blew my mind with that one.
that's the thing. It's not just Chandra. Chandra's the backup plan. And I'm not even sure you have to play Chandra. I just think if you can just stick a Sorin's Vengeance in the deck and have it be awesome. You know, because like,
Medina's been looking for any excuse to play Chandra since it's been released. So.
I actually tried it, like, when you first came out of your Grixis deck, I'm like, I think I'm going to put a Chandra in this deck, JR. And JR's like, don't do that.
Chandra gets the tar out of illusion.
Oh, man. So yeah, the other addition that, see, I like your list because it's running Desperate Ravings, and this list is running the Think Twices, and you talked about it in your article because of the red sources, but, like, I think that I want to just basically port over the Chandra, Firebrand, and the Sorins over to your list. And then, I'm probably just going to cut some things. Like, I'll cut an Olivia in your list and I think maybe Liliana and something sure. else.
Yeah, six. You can't just play. Remember, you can't play too many bombs because you're talking. Like I only had two Titans, right? Yeah. An Inferno Titan and a Wormcoil. You're talking about adding two Soren's Vengeances. Plus, you said you're adding a Grave Titan. You got to be careful to not get too fatty heavy.
Yeah, yeah. All I'm running right now is I'm running an Inferno, a Grave Titan, and a Wormcoil. So I would probably cut the Inferno because I have Chandra's coming down earlier. And then I would probably cut I'm going to leave the Grave Titan, but if I had to cut somebody else, it'd probably be the Wormcoil.
Yeah, and I'm not saying you have to cut, just keep in mind, you got to be aware of it because Mana Curves sometimes have a tendency to sneak up on us where they just start growing and growing and growing. Because, what's better than us, a sweet four casting cost spell? A sweet six casting cost. How about seven?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Soren's Vengeance is actually very, very well positioned right now because the life gain is just huge against some of these dagger decks, particularly the red decks, because the first Vengeance you pull off, that'll buy you enough time to find a Snapcaster Mage to set it up for the win.
Yeah,
it's kind of like a cruel ultimatum against the red decks.
Yeah, absolutely. And against the Wolf Run decks. It's a way to combo out that they can't really interact with. It's not that good against control, but that's okay. Especially at an SCG type event where control doesn't do quite as well as it does at a Pro Tour or whatever.
Against
control. I think this is a good place to be, and Soren's Vengeance is the right direction to go.
How do you feel about Olivia post Worlds?
She's awesome.
Still good.
She's as good as ever and should be in a lot more decks. One of the Wolf Run Ramp decks is actually a Jund deck, Wolf Run Jund.
And yeah, I noticed that.
The deck was Olivia. And then, Olivia is showing up a variety of places. I think it's not out of the question to see some slower red decks splashing her. Obviously Grixis of all different shapes and sizes, and even just black red control. I think Olivia is just absolutely fantastic. She's definitely as good as ever.
There was a Heartless Summoning black red control deck with her. Well, not black-red control, but it's a black-red Heartless Summoning deck, and they're running three or four of her and Grave Titan and other stuff, which seemed pretty cool.
Yeah. I was on the Mothership recently.
Yeah. Yeah, so the other thing I added to your deck, and I want to get your opinion on this one, I added Noxious Revival.
Huh.
Well, that's certainly something.
That was my reaction.
All right, moving on. No.
What's your thinking in Noxious Revival? Because Forbidden Alchemy opens up all these different options. You end up with more cards in your graveyard, and you want a little bit of selection.
Yeah, well, Forbidden Alchemy and Desperate Ravings basically put a lot in my graveyard. And what I was finding is there was times where I just wanted to get back a Wormcoil or an Inferno Titan that maybe I played it and they countered it or they killed it, and I'm just waiting to draw my next bomb to close the game, So what the Noxious Revival did for me was it let me rebuy those, or it turned my Snapcaster Mages into basically tutors, for anything that was in my graveyard. Because then
Snapcaster Mage is already a tutor for anything in your graveyard.
But not,
the only difference is that is creatures and land, right?
Yeah, it doesn't buy back my creatures, my lands, or my Lilianas. So I wanted to be able to buy those back. The other thing is the deck had a little bit of problem with freaking Solar Flare and stuff like that. So I just would sometimes play it as a value spell against those things to turn off a Snapcaster Mage or turn off a Unburial Rites or something like that.
That's actually kind of cute. That's not bad. That's interesting.
Don't encourage him.
Yes!
It's probably not good enough, but it doesn't sound it sounded real bad initially. But he does make a very good point, because in the world where Snapcaster Mage is being played so heavily, not to mention a variety of other things like Unburial Rites, it is actually a legit thing to Noxious Revival defensively. So, that's interesting. I'd have to try it a little bit, but if it's working for you, then by all means, it doesn't sound bad. It sounds I would be skeptical that it's optimal, but if you fit your playstyle, it depends on what the metagame's like too, because it may actually even be good, because that does sound better to me than Surgical Extraction. Surgical Extraction as a way to fight Snapcaster Mage is okay, or as a way to fight on burial rights, it's okay. But it's not even like surgical extracting somebody is really that much better than noxious revivaling them. Uh-huh. And the fact that noxious revival has this potential upside on yourself. So I it makes me more inclined to think of noxious revival as a cyborg card instead of like a surgical extraction.
Uh-huh.
And then boarding it in like one, but just having that extra value. But I don't know, it might just be good enough main deck. I mean, a lot of people use the graveyard.
Yeah.
So that doesn't sound like the worst.
The other thing I was using it for is in my sideboard I had one Elixir of Immortality. And what was happening, like you said, is I would get milled against like the blue-black decks, which blue-black right now is not very popular, but at the time when I first started playing it, blue-black was around. So what I would do is I'd put that Elixir in there, and then I would just Noxious Revival it back. So I can rebuy it, even if I forbidden alchemy it, or if I discard it or whatever, or if they mill it, then I could just rebuy it and then replay it and then.
Yeah, that's not bad. Elixir of Immortality is a card we discussed because it would help a ton against blue black.
Mm-hmm.
If you're concerned about a lot of blue black matchups, then that is a plan against them, and it's not that bad. Plus, obviously, Elixir of Immortality has upside against a red deck.
Yeah, against a red deck. This one, I know.
Yeah, that doesn't sound too bad. It depends on how you want to play it, but that seems reasonable. Another one to consider if you're going that route, Buried Ruin is also another option for getting back Elixir. But the nice thing about Noxious Revival, obviously, is just the fact that you can snapcaster it later. You know, you can out it away because obviously you don't want to draw that card with it.
Yeah, or they, like, a lot of times I found they're, like, the way that they were milling and stuff allowed me to sometimes put that on top, or if I put it on top and then, you know, Forbidden Alchemy or something, then I can just draw it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, that seems reasonable.
Sick.
Now we're never going to hear the end of this.
Woohoo!
No, so, you have one good one.
You know, there's a world of a difference between reasonable and, you know, sure to find the format. It's
okay,
just
good.
You can't be afraid to try crazy ideas. This is definitely a crazy idea, and the odds are it won't pan out, but it is. There's actually sound reasoning behind it. The reasons that he gave, they make sense, and I can see that it is possible that it could actually be good. You know?
The thing Patrick is he stopped listening as soon as you said it was reasonable.
What, are we still casting? No. All right, so who are you going to the Invitational, Patrick?
No. I'm attending a wedding that weekend, so I will be predisposed.
How about you? You're not going, right, JR?
Yeah, at this point, no.
Okay, Frank?
No, sir.
I could have told you that. Frank hasn't gone to anything ever.
I've never gone to anything ever.
He goes to Moto.
Yeah,
I do.
How about you, Christine?
There's events in my office every night.
It sounds much dirtier than it actually is.
That sounded so creepy.
That's Hey guys, you want to come into my events?
Not anymore.
No, I'm not.
Oh man, yeah. So I'm the only one going to the Invitational.
Dude, I'd love to be there.
Yeah.
If you could get him to push it back like a day.
I'll talk to Pete, see what we can do. So, yeah, I was all pumped for the topic because I wanted to talk about the Invitational and like the, I guess we talked a little bit about Standard, but also the Legacy format. It's a Legacy and a Standard tournament.
So Delver like, wins again.
So, if you guys were going to the Invitational, what would you play? Like, what decks for Standard and Legacy? Why don't you start, JR?
If I were playing, let's see here. Standard, I would probably play like I like the blue red Snapcaster deck. If I didn't play that, I'd play Wolf Run. For Legacy, I'd probably play some crazy Cephalid Breakfast deck. Just because I have a big crush on that deck. Yeah, that's what I got.
That doesn't seem like a deck you'd play.
Cephalid Breakfast?
Yeah.
Are you kidding? I love that deck.
No, I mean, I'm not saying you don't like it. I'm saying you don't seem like... it seems like you play a deck that you would win with.
Who says I wouldn't win with that?
All right, so
yeah, you're right. You're right.
Cephalid,
there you go.
Breakfast and Delver, the blue red Delver.
Yeah.
You like that deck?
I think it's neat. Like, I don't know if it's good, but you know, I have no experience in the format, and I play two decks that I enjoy playing. So
okay,
that's can't go wrong there, I guess.
I think if you're gonna run blue red Delver, you should just run Illusions. Just
that's
my
probably opinion. Fine. I mean, I wouldn't argue with someone who handed me an Illusions deck, so.
Okay, so in the imaginary event that you go to the Invitational, you're going to play Illusions.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm going to play two serious decks, I'd probably play Illusions and then some sort of Rug Delver deck in Legacy, but.
Nice. What about you, Frank?
I'd probably play something Grixis in Standard. I just feel like it suits my style more. And I like the techie, like Sorin's Vengeance, Chandra, Snapcaster Mage. Like, those all seem like good cards on their own, so, like, when you put them together and they do some degenerate things, like, I think I'd enjoy that.
I thought you were going to say you like the techie Noxious Revival.
It's not all about you, buddy.
So what would you play in Legacy?
I'd be on the fence. I'd probably play some version with Delver or either, like, blue-white, like, Stoneblade.
Reasonable.
I just feel like both of those decks are pretty solid, and, you know, I wouldn't want to go outside of my comfort range too much if it was at the Invitational.
So, all right, Medina, what would you play?
I would probably play Grixis and, like, Reanimator or Ad Nauseam Tendrils.
Yeah, hey, we didn't lose the rest of our posse, did we?
No. Christine, you're still there, right?
Huh?
Oh, there.
Are you sleeping? Huh? But,
yeah, we're... So what would you play, Christine, if you had to play in these events?
Well, I don't have, like, a Legacy deck or anything, but I would probably just keep with my Illusions. I haven't really play-tested anything new yet, so I'd stick with the winner.
Sick.
Real original, Christine.
Hey, Elspeth's good in Legacy.
Yeah.
Actually, that's true. He's right.
I've never played, like, any Legacy, because I don't really have any, like, Legacy cards, I guess? I don't know.
That's fair.
All your cards are Legacy cards.
Oh. Listen to this guy.
You got any mental missteps over there?
All right.
Let's get down to that. Okay, fine.
All right. Well,
try to help somebody out.
What would you play, Patrick?
I definitely play Grixis in Standard. Not even a question, but I would probably looking at adopting some kind of Sorin's Vengeance action.
Uh-huh.
And if actually this probably, I'm guessing this is going up after Wednesday, right?
Yeah.
Going up on Wednesday?
It'll probably go up on next Monday.
Next Monday? Oh, well, in that case, it'll already be retro. Yeah. Because my plan is to have a list together by my deadline, I guess, is tomorrow. So I'm procrastinating actually finishing it up. But my list, my article from last week, at the time people hear this, will have contained the list that I would have played.
Oh, sick.
And then as far as Legacy goes, I guess I would probably... I mean, if I knew that I would go, I would have done a little bit more testing or whatever, you know. Uh-huh. But if I just sort of got, you know, dropped into it right now, the tournament's going to start in an hour, then I'd probably end up just playing a blue-white splash red blade deck, you know, just a stone blade deck.
Yeah.
Alternatively, I'd like to think that there's a chance that I'd really play a bug deck or something. But I'd probably just play blue-white splash red.
He's mulling over his imaginary options.
So another question about decks before we leave this topic. Patrick, I know you play a lot of Vintage, or used to at least. I'm about to finish my set of Power, so it's a format that I'm trying to get into. Any suggestions on that?
Have your duels be black-bordered.
Excellent choice on that. Okay.
How are we looking on that end?
Well, not as close as my Power.
Okay.
All right. So I guess, like, as far as strategic wise, like, don't be the Joker who is playing Dredge or Workshops or any of that funny business. I mean, don't get me wrong. If you're into that, more power to you.
But I kind of want to play some sort of Gush Bob deck. That's where I'm at initially.
Absolutely. You can join the proud ranks of the bad guys. Like, they're with you. You know, I don't usually play Gush or whatever, but like there's kind of a different metagame depending on where you're playing Vintage, because Vintage tournaments often don't really have the Vintage metagame. They just sort of have the Vintage tournament metagame. Mm-hmm. There are some, there's a number of us who are all vintage players who don't play in tournaments. And the metagame can go in a little bit different of a direction when you're playing with, you know, Louis Scott Vargas and David Ochoa and, Owen Turtenwald and Ifro and Dave Williams and Matt Sperling. Like, the competition is very good, but you kind of realize, first of all, blue decks are definitely what's popping. And, second of all, there is a ton of room in vintage to play, you know, to try stuff and to play crazy, unique decks, you know? Mm-hmm. Too many people get hung up on just copying the exact, you know, like Dush Bob deck that everybody else is playing. And you end up just walking into the other person's preparation where they've actually been testing against you over and over and over again. You know, not you personally, but they've been testing against your strategy.
Right.
Vintage has a bazillion cards legal. It's so easy to come at people with stuff that they aren't expecting, you know, if you're actually going to play in a tournament. And, you know, like the last time, like in Philly, the deck I was playing in Philly with like Pakula and Sperling and all them, was a Stoneforge Mystic, Batterskull Skull Clamp, Vindicate Revoke Existence, Gorilla Shaman, Kataki, like Pyroblast, Mental Misstep, you know, like all
you're
this...
blowing my mind right now, Patrick. I just want you to know that.
Like, you can make stuff up. Like,
it just sounds like you were naming cards that were in front of you. I'll be honest with you.
What's that?
It just sounds like you were naming cards that were in front of you just then.
No, that's like. Thought Seizes and Cabal Therapies. Dude, you put a Skull Clamp on your Stoneforge and sack it to Cabal Therapy. Yes!
Yeah, that seems like you're winning. I love it.
Playing against stacks, right? How the hell did they beat a Stoneforge Mystic? You go turn one, Mox land, Stoneforge go. They, you know, they shop out a Lodestone Golem or whatever, and then you just Stoneforge down your Batterskull.
Tell them good luck.
That's pretty sweet.
Exactly. Good luck, dude.
Have fun. This was fun.
And so many cards, like when you have 15,000 cards to choose from, you can find all these sweet cards that do multiple things. You know, like Revoke Existence can hit their Oath of Druids, or their Blightsteel Colossus, or their Lodestone Golem. I mean, having that versatility is just so big. And that's why, you know, you play your powerful cards, you know, your Ancestral Recall, your Time Walk, your Demonic Tutor, and Black Lotus, all that, you know, you fill up your deck with enough power to get you there. But then you just play one-ofs, lots of sweet one-ofs, so that you have access to whatever you want. You know, it's sort of like playing Commander or whatever. Because, like, you just, like, I play one Vindicate. Because Vindicate's a sweet card. I like casting Vindicate. And, you know, Ancient Grudge. Ancient Grudge is sweet.
Man, just now I'm just excited to play. You're just making me really excited to play this patch.
Dude, if Vintage is so awesome when you play the sweet cards, I mean, build a real deck. You know, make sure you have enough mana and that your deck has, you know, tons of answers to shops and dredge so that you're not just one of the many people who help make those real decks. But then, you know, as long as you're keeping it real, you have your, you know, X number of cyborg cards against dredge and a proactive game plan. And against shops, you have, you know, like a dozen ways to fight artifacts or whatever. You know, once you've got, you know, the basics out of the way, you can tune your deck to beat other control decks because you know the only real deck. Like, as long as you have some powerful cards in your deck, the only real decks are blue decks. So you just build this deck full of cards that are good against blue decks and sweet cards. Literally, just play whatever cards you think are sweet. Like, I love Skull Clamp. I've always loved Skull Clamp so much. So getting a chance to actually play with it is sweet. And Snapcaster Mage carries a Skull Clamp better than anybody. That guy was born to carry Skull Clamp.
I use the term carry loosely.
Not better than Blood Gas, though.
Yeah. Dude, Blood Gas is okay. People play Blood Gas in Vintage sometimes, but yeah. I think Snapcaster Mage is a little bit better in Vintage. And Jace the Mind Sculptor? Dude, Jacing in Vintage is so good!
I can only imagine.
So anyway, my advice would be play some powerful cards, make, you know, build a you know, use a template from somebody to get, you know, an idea to make sure that you're playing enough mana and all that, but play with more sweet cards because that's the single biggest mistake I see Vintage people make, besides drinking their own Kool-Aid, is the not playing enough sweet cards. You know, there's too much of this, you know, building off of whatever did well in the most recent tournaments and playing all the standard cards that people are supposed to play, and Vintage isn't like that.
You've just doubled my excitement about getting this together. I just know you know.
Oh man, that's
awesome. Revoke existence of all cards. I think I have a foil one of those laying around somewhere.
You can play whatever you want. Literally, just play whatever the sweetest cards are. Dude, I've played Deranged Hermit. I love Hermit Druid Vintage. I'll just rock a Hermit Druid.
Wait, what? Really?
Hermit Druid.
That was my commander deck, was a Hermit Druid deck.
Dude, Hermit Druid is so good. You tap him and you mill your whole deck and then you just win. He's like a one card combo that just wins the game, and not even, people don't even play very much removal. What are they even going to do about him?
You mimeoplasm people? Is that how you do it? Just with,
Absolutely. You can use the mimeoplasm kill with like, the
and Delver, or not with Delver, whatever the guy is. Board of Extinction. Yeah, I don't know. Shit.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want. Kill however you want. But the point is that Hermit Druid, it's so easy to just go turn one land, Mox Hermit Druid, and then turn two, tap it, kill you. Or if you're playing like Survival the Fittest, I love playing Survival in Vintage. Survival, go get my my anger, discard my anger, go get Hermit Druid. Or Grandson Zenith to get Hermit Druid. A good way to get ideas for Vintage decks that people haven't built yet is look at every ban list in every format. Any card that's banned in any format, if people aren't playing it in Vintage, they should, because it's probably sweet.
That's some great advice.
Oh, I'm going to get crazy with this. It's going to get real.
Sick. All right.
Thank you, Patrick.
Before we go on to plugs, I just want to ask, because we were talking about Vintage and Commander and stuff, one of our listeners, Joel Nidri, wanted to ask if you play any like casual formats. Not necessarily Commander, but like if you just sit down with your friends and just play casual Magic.
Oh, yeah. Are you talking to me now?
Yeah, you.
Yeah. We do a variety of stuff, you know. Like, so I don't usually play Commander proper unless, like, by request I'll do a gunslinging. But I guess there isn't as much gunslinging going on at pre-releases anymore. But make up formats all the time, you know. Like Mental Magic, I'm kind of I've had a lot of success on the Mental Magic, the Underground Magic, Mental Magic circuit.
You're kind of a beast at that. I've heard folklore about your prowess in that format.
But I like to actually, one of the things we'll be doing, you know, we'll be sitting between rounds at a GP or whatever, and I make formats up all the time. You know, other people do too as well, but something that I just enjoy a ton. One of the variants that's popular, I didn't make this one up, but this is just one that we play, is 5-second Mental Magic. You ever heard that one?
Yep.
Yeah,
5-second Mental Magic where you just, you know, you take turns, you have no hand, and you just draw a card, and you have 5 seconds to name a card that has the same casting cost, and you can't say the same card, and you can't repeat.
Uh-huh.
You know, doing little stuff like that, or sometimes just thought experiments, like a format where the only legal cards are like Goblin Lackey, Shivan Dragon, Dwarven Ruins, Lightning Bolt, Goblin Grenade, Dragon Whelp, Storm Shaman, and Mog Fanatic and Goblin Mutant or something. You know, like those are the only cards in the format, and or Pyroplasm, I don't know. The point is, you pick like a dozen cards and make a format out of it. And it seems like it's so, you know, like 12 cards. What kind of a format has only 12 cards? And you can, you know, no limit. You can just play as many as you want in the mountains, obviously. But, thought experiments like that are actually really, really interesting. And, or, you know, decks where you don't get a deck, you just pick your opening hand, and that's you and the other person each just pick your opening hand. Or the Sam Black Mental Magic. On the first turn, you get one mana, and then the other person gets one mana, and then you get two mana, and the other person gets two mana, and so on. And each time you get one card of your choice, and you can't play cards to put cards into your hand, or take extra turns.
Oh, wow.
That's actually a really interesting format.
Yeah. Yeah, these seem like insane, like, yeah, they would definitely be pretty taxing on the brain.
Adina, what are you doing tomorrow?
There's a whole range. I mean, some of them can be, you know, just happy-go-lucky, whereas other ones are a lot more of a, you know, serious chess sort of, you know, brain drain type of thing. But one of the ones that I really enjoy, that we don't play that often because it's so taxing, but it's very strategic and it's interesting to think about, is zero variance. It's one I made up where you have 7 cards, the other person has 7 cards, and you can use any stack of cards you want to represent them because none of the cards mean anything.
Uh-huh.
But every card is just whatever you want. And, you and the other person agree if you're playing, you know, Vintage or Legacy or whatever, but you can never name a card twice. You know, once a card's been named, you can't name it again. and there's permanently Leyline of the Void and Arcane Lab that can never be gotten rid of. So you never deal with the graveyard at all, and you also, you have to decide, because there's two different ways to play it. There's, you can play it with lands allowed or with not. And if you don't, then, like, you can just have every land be Utopia. Mm-hmm. It's more interesting to allow lands, but it requires a lot of bookkeeping. And, if you don't allow lands, it ends up being a lot cleaner and a lot smoother of gameplay. Uh-huh. But not everybody has the patience for it. If you try it sometime, it doesn't play out the way you might think, you know? Like,
I've actually played this format before, and it is very interesting. I enjoyed it very much.
So you play all sorts of stuff, but it's not just one thing. You know, we make up all sorts of different variations to play. Just different things to you know, brain candy, I guess.
I like it.
Also, occasionally we do, like, I mean, other people cube a ton now. Back in the day, we didn't call it cubing, but I did an awful lot of it way, like the sped-style drafts, a variety of different drafts, you know, back in the early 90s that are the same as cubing now. But one of the things I like to do now, or I used to do even more, but sometimes I'll design sets and just print them out and people will just draft, you know, like people will draft out of them. Like in Denver, at Grand Prix Denver, I think like Sam Black, Conley Woods, a variety of different people were all, Owen, we're all drafting out of a set that I made, you know?
Well, you spent a small time in R&D, right?
Oh, yeah. I used to work for Wizards in R&D. Yeah, that was way back. And it's actually one of those things that, you know, not to dwell too much back on the previous topic, but definitely broke my heart. I had the dream job working for WotC, and then ended up stuff came up, you know, from years prior, and I had been retired and moved away from all that for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the past is a way of sneaking up on you. But there's no question, every night for, you know, that entire 5 years, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, oh, my God, I had the dream job. Now I'm here, like, just, you know, like, fighting to not give in to despair, you know?
Yeah.
But it was awesome. Yeah, working for WotC was awesome, and designing cards. I mean, a lot of people love designing cards, but I think an awful lot of people get discouraged too easily because people will slam their ideas sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And designing cards, if you enjoy it, do it, you know? Do it. Like, if you, I mean, don't expect life to turn out any one way because you never know which way it's going to go. But just if you enjoy it, keep doing it.
Right. Well, it's like that thing about haters, you know? People are going to hate on what you're doing. That doesn't mean you have to listen to them.
Absolutely. And you should listen to advice, particularly from people you believe to be credible sources, because
that's different. That's constructive criticism.
Designing cards. Almost everybody who actually designs cards for fun is real bad. they shouldn't do it. But it's one of those things where people don't even realize how, like, the technology in Magic has improved tremendously because there are millions of people who are trying to win, and it's been around for years and years and years. Not nearly as many people have designed Magic cards or have a community built around trying to design Magic cards better the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's some Salvation boards that really do a good job, but my biggest advice would be, if you're designing cards and you actually enjoy it and it's something you take seriously, then first of all, Mark Rosewater's column, you got to read it like gospel. And second of all, Jordy Tate did a really a brutally honest piece about custom sets that I think that anybody who is an aspiring card designer absolutely needs to read, you know?
Yeah, that sounds like good advice. I think it's good advice to also, like you said, kind of – take in the criticism, and you shouldn't be afraid to ask yourself if the person is right, no matter if the person is a troll or an asshole or whatever, you know, they might be saying something that's true, you know? So, like, if they say, like, every time someone says something about me, I always ask myself, well, is this person right? Like, is this really how it is? Is this reality? And then, like, I, like, troll them back or, like, say, whatever, you're an idiot. But
I feel like you actually do that later. Like, there's a whole period of time where you troll, well, maybe me personally, where you try and troll me back immediately, and then later you might go back and reflect on it.
I immediately
ask myself, is this person right?
And maybe then, when he's
so it takes you like 0.2 seconds to determine that I'm wrong? Is that what you're saying?
No. How I respond to the results is totally different. You might be right, and I'm like, he's right, but I'm not going to give this one up so easy. Or I might be like, yeah, it sounds like he's right, but let's test the theory. Let's put some weight on this table and see if it stands up, you know? And then you put some weight on the table and it stands up, and I say, okay, you got it, JR. You're right.
Has that ever occurred?
People are notoriously bad at evaluating their own ideas, you know?
Yeah.
And card design, like a number of other things, it's real easy for people to fall in love with the idea that they have, you know? And part of designing cards, like so many other things, is being able to kill your babies, kill your darlings. You know, it's the same thing with writing. People will write something and they'll think that they wrote just this awesome thing. And really, there's more going on in their head that they didn't actually write down. And the same can be true with card design. You have to be able to figure out good sources of constructive criticism.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Well, is that all for Magic Talk? Because I want to move on to the plugs where we get to let Patrick and Christine plug some new projects that they got going on.
Yeah, I think we're good.
Yeah, let's move on to that.
All right, let's move on to plugs, and then we'll move on to shoutouts. Sick. So let's start with Christine. We haven't heard her talk for a while. So so you want to do some more traveling, right? We talked about that a little bit before the cast.
Like, since I got such an amazing response with Elspeth, a lot of people have been asking me, like, what's my next costumes are, and, like, can I see you in person somewhere? So I want to do a lot more. Well, like, not like that.
Where can I,
like,
see you in person?
Can I see you, like, what events can I see you at?
You got any windows in your house?
But,
what time do you leave for work?
I have had a lot of people ask me where exactly, like, my school is, and I was like, eh.
So where exactly do you live?
If I were to put this into a GPS, what would I have to put to get to your location?
But so you're thinking about traveling more.
Yeah, so I've decided I was going to try and just make it to, like, a few more Grand Prix, because I hear that's the way to go to, like, you know, have, like, fun again at a Magic tournament. And to go to a few, like, or go to a, like, Magic pretty much, like, convention almost, or where Magic's, like, really big at Gen Con, because I've never been to it.
Gen Con.
Gen Con. I'm sorry, it's Gen Con. I can't even say it right.
We'll edit it out, don't worry.
Hey, okay, cool.
That's a lot of work, bro. I'm not going to
edit that. We're not going to edit that. I'm just trying to make her feel better.
So yeah, you want to make it to some GPs and Gen Con?
Yeah, so I want to for sure make it to Gen Con, because I usually go to anime conventions and other, you know, comic book conventions already, so it'd be cool to go to one, like, so far away, and maybe Dragon Con. I hear that one's really cool to go to, but,
Cosplayer's Paradise.
Yeah, that's what I heard. But, I definitely have, like, a student budget, so I would never, like, ever be able, I can, like, make the costumes just barely, but I could never, like, you know, travel really farther than California, so it'd be cool just to get out and just meet new people, like, all over.
Yeah, we were talking about this after you did the A-Team, and they actually talked about this a little bit on the A-Team, because Jay Boosh from the A-Team, I don't know if you guys listen to that podcast, but I recommend it. You guys should listen to the A-Team. They're pretty badass. Shout out to the A-Team. Jay Boosh, we sent him, like, all the listeners of the A-Team and all the people on Twitter sent him to Toronto, which is, like, across Canada. Well, I don't know if it's really across Canada, but
I don't even know what Canada looks like.
I've been to Canada a couple of times, but,
you know. It's like a whole other country. We don't have to worry about it.
It's like another state, dude. It's just, like,
divided up into sections up there. I thought it was just one big state.
So the community was good enough to send him. And I guess what we're going to do is we're going to put the vibes out to Wizards to say, hey, maybe you guys want to hook Christine up with some plane flight, and she can show up as a planeswalker. But we also want to put the word out to the listeners. So I don't know. You were saying that maybe you You have like somebody who can help you set something up so that listeners can send you cashola, or how does that
work? Yeah, I got a PayPal account set up with my friend. Like he helped me do all this because I'm just absolutely just kind of special when it comes to setting that kind of stuff up. But so I set up a PayPal account, so apparently you can send me money via another PayPal account and just transfer money into there. And I guess that's like, I thought that was the best way, I guess, via internet to do it.
That all feeds to your offshore Swiss account.
Right. Yeah.
Basically, you're talking, doing a little fundraising to try to bring more Magic characters come to life, cosplay style, to
Exactly.
Yeah. And I'm down. I mean, we're not telling you as listeners you have to do this. Like, this is totally optional. I'm down with this kind of stuff. I like to see people travel for Magic. I like to see, like Patrick, I like to see Magic culture grow. And, just like, you know, if somebody could do something like in an aspect of Magic that they love, I always want to see that be promoted. Cause like, for me, like I like writing about Magic finance, and for a while there wasn't a lot of people who had the chance to really write about Magic finance. I think Ben Blywise was one of the only ones writing. He did an awesome job. But like, it wasn't something that people could do. But now it's something that people can do. They can write about Magic finance. That's something that, you know, websites want to have on their website as content. So from my perspective, whenever I see something that like Christine likes to do cosplay and she wants to bring that to Magic, you know, I want to see her succeed because that's good for everyone. You know?
Yeah, it's good for the game.
Yeah, and I don't just cosplay. Like, I actually, with every costume, I have a deck with that costume that correlates in some way. Like,
you know,
Elspeth.
The ultimate spellslinger.
Like, yeah, I literally, in Elspeth, if you had asked me at Worlds if I wanted to duel with you, I had a deck, but nobody wanted to do it. Nobody asked me.
They were scared. They were intimidated.
I guess so. That's what
Who
a few
wants
people
to fight
said.
Elspeth?
But,
I'm
yeah,
a big
you know.
Garrick Wildspeaker fan. Is there any way we're going to see a Garrick costume in the future?
Are you serious?
Somebody was throwing
around
on Twitter.
That was a joke.
Somebody seriously was on Twitter, like, apparently throwing out that they want to do a Garrick, and I was like, that would be freaking amazing.
Can you do dude costumes?
whatever became of LHV?
I don't know. Like, we never really actually set anything up because, and I don't, that would be a really interesting costume to make for a man, I must say. It's a very odd, very cadaverous kind of looking bodied, and
yeah,
that'd be interesting to make. But
I think
totally
the face
down.
Part would probably be the weirdest part to make.
Yeah, the weird like lacerated off like.
Yeah, I got this boomerang on my face.
Yeah, that too.
I'll tell you what.
Very practical.
If you bring a Jace the Mind Sculptor costume to a Grand Prix, and I'll rock it during the event.
Oh wow!
No doubt, 100%. I bet you will actually.
Somebody do that.
Sounds sick.
Somebody get this man a Jason Mind Sculptor.
Somebody, Christine, she's the professional here.
She's like, audience, make it.
But straight to it's going to take people obviously getting her to an event. But Christine, if people help get you to an event, you help me rock a Jason Mind Sculptor one of these things.
Guaranteed.
Wow.
Make sure you get Patrick's measurements because I would really.
Oh yeah, no, of course.
Too short.
He said
he was. That would be awkward.
He said he was 6'3", skinny motherfucker, right?
Yeah, that's what I heard.
I can see it too short. You see like shoes and socks underneath.
Oh man. So what we're gonna do is we'll provide the way that you can contribute to Christine's travels in the show notes. And me and JR have been starting this little venture where we're buying and selling cards. And so what we're going to do is we're going to give – this is kind of weird, but we're going to give you guys 5% off everything that you buy. And you guys can choose to give that 5% to Christine, and we'll just deposit that in her PayPal account. So